Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's that time of year when the Supreme Court wraps up its term with a flurry of what are usually its biggest decisions of the year. The Obamacare ruling, same-sex marriage, affirmative action, abortion rights, they've all come in late June in recent years, and today is supposed to be their second or third to last announcement day, with cases hanging in the balance, including ones on trademarks, immigrant rights, church and state separation for schooling, even possibly, though pretty unlikely, on Trump's travel ban if they do that really quickly. Here with me now, after an hour of furious parsing, an hour and a half since the 10 o'clock release, is Ellie Mistal, editor-at-large for Above the Law and legal editor for WNYC's podcast, More Perfect. Morning, Ellie.
Morning. How are you doing?
Good. So there were three decisions this morning. These are not the biggest three that we're expecting before the end of the term, but there's some interesting stuff here. So let's go down them. And you want to start with Maslin Jack versus U.S. Is that a good place to start?
All three of them were kind of, there are bigger fish to fry. But
So thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you. No, I'm kidding.
I think the biggest thing that happened today was what wasn't decided today. But anyway, Maslin Jack was an immigration case where a person had basically lied on her application for citizenship. Those lies were kind of immaterial to why she was to her grant of citizenship. But the lies later came out, and so they stripped her and deported her and her husband of her citizenship. She protested, and the court today ruled that you can't strip somebody of their citizenship if their misstatement was immaterial, which is a nice little decision.
Okay,
good
now
job,
so her. Before we go on to these other two decisions, since you've characterized them as meh, what are the big ones by way of background that we're waiting for? I gather there are going to be more tomorrow, and then I guess maybe some on Monday.
Yes. So the ones that we're still waiting for are Mesa v. Hernandez, which is an immigration case where a cop, a Border Patrol agent, shot a kid in Mexico while standing in the U.S., right? And so that's a huge case because can the family of the Mexican victim sue in the United States against this police officer? Obviously, they at first asked for the police officer to be extradited to Mexico. The Obama administration wouldn't do that. I think that was an error. So now they're trying to sue in the United States, and the cops are the Border Patrol agents are saying, "Well, this was an extra judicial thing, so we were kind of allowed to do this." So it's kind of interesting to see what the court's going to decide on that.
They can't apparently be convicted for shooting U.S. citizens in their cars in Minnesota. So why a Mexican teenager across the border? That's another show.
That's where I'm going with that too. And the other kind of big case has actually been around. It's a religious freedom case that's been around since Scalia was alive. And we still haven't had a decision on it. It's Trinity Lutheran versus Missouri. It's actually a pretty interesting application of what will be an interesting tea leaf of where the court is on religious freedom. It's a case where a school in Missouri, a Lutheran school in Missouri, had applied for like a state program to get it. It was actually a playground. And they were not given this playground because they were a religious institution. And so the generally conservatives are arguing, well, you shouldn't exclude the school from getting the playground just because they were religious. That's an impingement on their religious freedom. I think more progressives say, look, there weren't enough playgrounds to go along, to go around, right? So why should the religious school get the playground before all of these other public schools?
And that's sort of the underlying philosophical debate in the larger vouchers question and other things having to do with separation of church and state, where the money actually flows to the individual. And I don't know your personal view on this, but the conservatives would argue, look, it's one thing to set up a state-sponsored religion or to favor one religion over another in some way, clearly that's not good. But if money goes to individuals and individuals can spend their money however they want, why should that include religious organizations. Or by the same token, with this Johnson Amendment that Trump says he's going to try to get repealed, if other kinds of not-for-profit organizations can spend money on politics, why can't churches?
Right. I mean, it's the freedom of religion or freedom from religion is kind of where the issues always break down. I mean, I think that you can draw a clear distinction. And look, as even though I'm and I generally wear this on my sleeve, even though I am generally progressive, I am not a separation of church and state absolutist, especially when it comes to schools and children and issues like that. But I think that the rule, as we've seen it applied in other cases, if there's we're not dealing with unlimited funds, right? If there are enough funds for everybody, then sure, everybody should get some regardless of religious affiliation. But if we're dealing with scarce resources, and the Trinity Lutheran case is really a case of scarcity of the resource, then you can't favor a religious institution over a public institution. I think that's a completely rational kind of point of view. I don't know if there are 5 votes on the court that agree with me. Again, this case was argued when Scalia was alive. I imagine that Scalia would have had a very strong opinion about this, and we're still kind of waiting to see what happens.
So those two to come down tomorrow or Monday, presumably, and the one other big one?
Okay, so then the other thing that wasn't kind of – didn't happen today that we're still waiting to see happen is whether or not the court is going to take – one of these travel ban cases, right? They didn't talk about it today. They might talk about it tomorrow. They might talk about it on a Monday. They have to decide whether or not they're actually going to hear the case.
How could they not?
Yeah, so look, betting money, most legal analysts say that the court is going to have to take this case because it's such a huge issue. It's all over the media. It's a big deal. They're going to have to take the case and rule on the decision. I think a lot of listeners don't always understand that the court can choose its own docket. The court can take or not take any case it wants to. There are very few cases that the court has to take kind of legally or constitutionally. So it's their call whether or not to take the travel ban case. And I have an off-center kind of controversial opinion. I don't think the court's going to take the case. I don't see what's in it for them. There's no circuit split. And by that, I mean, so far, the lower courts are united in their banning of this travel ban.
That's two circuit courts, right?
That's two circuit courts, the ninth and the fourth.
And they both tend to lean liberal, though to different degrees, those circuits, right?
I mean, it's weird to say that the Fourth Circuit leans liberal now, but sure. Okay, fine. Let's say that they both lean liberal. Let's also point out that there were dissenting justices on both of those lower circuits, and the dissenting justices were generally conservative justices. But their core argument for dissenting was that we shouldn't kind of take the president's intent as expressed through campaign tweets and statements as kind of indicative of what the intent of this actual policy in front of us is. Donald Trump himself blew up that argument a couple of weeks ago when he went onto Twitter again as president and said, it's a travel ban. It's a politically correct travel ban. It's a watered down.
He slapped Jeff Sessions' wrists in one of those tweets by saying, you should have just gone through with the original travel ban all the way up to the Supreme Court instead of issuing this watered-down, politically correct version. But I guess that could cut both ways. That could work against the president in the way that you say, because it again reveals that his intent, even in the things that actually got introduced, was to ban Muslims. By the same token, he's saying, God, you didn't really ban Muslims. That's what I wanted.
Look, let's now think about this from the perspective of the Supreme Court, all right? Let's assume Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch are all in on the travel ban. Gorsuch because maybe he had to get the job. Alito and Thomas because that's just how they are. Let's think about Roberts and Kennedy. Do either of them really want to be the author of a decision that will age like rotten eggs, right? I think certainly if they uphold the ban, I don't think that that's a decision that we're going to look back on in 30 years and be like, oh, that was great. I think that's going to be more like a Korematsu kind of decision where the Korematsu was the case upholding internment of Japanese citizens during World War II. I don't think this case is going to look very good 30 years from now if they end up upholding the ban. A. B. Do either of them want to write a decision that the President of the United States might undercut the day it comes out on Twitter, right? Does Roberts want to get up there and say, like, oh, this is okay, this isn't racist, this isn't ban on Muslims, and then have the very next tweet from President Trump be, does John Roberts upheld the Muslim ban? Does Roberts want that? I don't think so.
So those are arguments for why they're not even going to take the case. But right. I guess the thing that might motivate them is, I mean, this is not going to be cynical. This is the Supreme Court justices of the United States have a history, I think, and you're the Supreme Court expert, I'm not, but I think they have a history of feeling a responsibility to take the really big constitutional questions that face the American people and accepting those cases.
Sure. I mean, I think that that is fair. They do feel they take their look. It's absolutely fair to say they take their jobs very seriously and they know exactly how important they are. But that doesn't mean that they are above some legal dodges. So another kind of popular theory out on the internets, what the kids are saying, is that one way of dodging this entire issue would be for the Supreme Court to take the case and then almost immediately rule it as moot. So mootness means that we don't have to decide what actually happened because the issue underlying the case is no longer a live issue. As many people will remember, Trump says that we need the travel ban for 90 days or 120 days to figure out what's going on. By the time this gets to the Supreme Court, they've had their 120 days,
right?
The Trump administration is arguing that it hasn't had its 120 days because after the injunction, all work stopped on this extreme vetting while they figured it out, so they really haven't had their opportunity. But that's a kind of spurious argument, and it's possible that the court will take the case and then say this is a moot issue because you've had 120 days to figure everything out, and so we don't have to decide this.
That seems like a real... I didn't even think of that before, those kids on the internet. They're pretty smart. That seems really logical to me.
There are lots of ways this could go out. Do you know what we're not talking about? We're not really talking about the way where it comes down 5-4, let's ban Muslims. Look, I've been wrong before. I've been wrong about Roberts before, especially. Roberts has let me down before. But I just... Think about it from the perspective of Neil Gorsuch. I just kind of snarked him by saying maybe he had to. Do we think that Neil Gorsuch, sitting in a what many will view as a stolen, illegitimate Supreme Court seat, wants his very first big-time decision to be the tie-breaking vote upholding the man who's appointed him signature controversial policy? Hmm. Is that really what Gorsuch wants? So that's what I say, Brian. I just
food for thought over the next few days. So will we know by Monday whether they're taking a travel ban case or not?
I think so. I think we'll know if and again, I'm kind of off cent. I'm out on a limb here saying that they're not going to take it at all. The betting money is that they're going to take it.
But one way or the other.
And I think we'll know by Monday.
All right. Watch this space. So we're almost out of time, but there's one decision that's relatively minor that we didn't even touch on that did come down today. You want to do that one briefly?
Oh, I thought we wanted to talk about Gil Whitford, which is the case they decided to take, the gerrymandering case.
Oh, we could do that.
Yeah. So the other case that they decided to take this week, I think it was yesterday, is called Gil v. Whitford, is a partisan gerrymandering case. Now, most of your listeners know gerrymandering is a huge issue. It's a big reason why our politics look the way they do. Earlier this term, the Supreme Court overruled a racial gerrymandering case. So it's weird to say, but constitutionally, it is not okay to split voters up on the basis of race, except for in some, you know, a few situations. But it is completely constitutional, at least under our current view of the Constitution, to break people up based on their party. So the Supreme Court agreed to take a case on partisan gerrymandering. As usual in these cases, the key fulcrum here is going to be Anthony Kennedy. Anthony Kennedy has in the past been very positive about partisan gerrymandering. He doesn't think that it's unconstitutional. He thinks that it's fine to split people up on the basis of party. But Anthony Kennedy is also a near kind of free speech absolutist. And the way that this case is coming to the court is not under kind of like an equal protection or due process violation. It's coming up as a speech violation. I, as a Democrat in Wisconsin, have been denied my speech rights because they have gerrymandered me into a district where my vote and my voice doesn't matter. And that might be interesting to Kennedy. So it's, I think that's a huge case. And if that goes, however that goes, especially if that goes against partisan gerrymandering, that is a case that will change the nature of our electoral process next term.
It must be something to be Anthony Kennedy, a person who is capable of living with ambivalence in an environment where there's four on this side and four on that side who seem to wallow in extreme certainty. And then your ambivalence and however you resolve it has such vast implications for Americans and the world.
And he's aware of it, too. I think the other fascinating thing about him is that Anthony Kennedy is a man who understands his own legacy and is protective of his own legacy. Again, that's why I say, if you think Hannity wants to write the travel ban approval, come on, man. But yeah, Kennedy is very aware of his own stature. And so it'll be interesting to see which way he goes here.
Elie Mystal, editor-at-large for Above the Law and legal editor for WNYC Supreme Court Podcast, an offshoot of the Radiolab world, that podcast called More Perfect. Elie, thank you.
Thank you.